Well, that's the Wayne Eddy Affair theme, so it must be me. Hello, everybody, and welcome to February, finally. February 1st, 2018. That is so hard to say, 2018. Well, let's get down to business here this morning. I have a gentleman seated across from me, and he's been my guest before, but we kind of ended, when you got out of college, and I got to make sure I don't... Chris Canelli.
You got it.
All right.
Nice work.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
One of the things that I do when I have people come back, and it's been a while.
Yep.
You know, how long do you think it's been since?
6 weeks at least.
Okay. Mm. I don't assume that everybody listening is listening all the time.
Yeah.
So I play catch up.
Absolutely.
And then we'll get more detail in regards to your college career. Mm-hmm. And are out of college?
Yep. Well, I think we're getting to the end of graduating college.
Okay. Now, Chris Canelli is a new owner, mm-hmm. and I say that with tongue-in-cheek somewhat, because how long have you owned Northfield Construction?
5 years on May 1st here, so almost 5 years.
And, of course, we talked about the fact that Ray Cox, a friend of mine, a friend of the community, who I had the privilege to do an interview with about a mm-hmm. week before he passed away.
Oh, wow.
And I'm glad the family will have that forever. And I remember telling you that Ray told me to get you on the air because you're one hell of a guy. And
right.
And took me 5 years to do it.
That's right. We got here, though.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Wonderful man. Did a lot for Northfield.
A thumbnail sketch, if you will. Born where?
Born in Fullerton, California, but only spent 6 months there.
Okay.
And grew up in Grand Forks, North Dakota, where my mother was from. So they moved back there when I was a young age. Graduated high school there. Just my brother and I were in the family. And then was off to Kalamazoo College in southwest Michigan, where I was a tennis player in college and did some foreign study and a great little liberal arts school there. We do have two Northfield graduates at Kalamazoo College right now who are in the community, so that was fun for me to see. I went to an alumni event recently, and both the parents were there and got to talk to them. So great little liberal arts school, similar to a Carleton or any of the MIAC schools.
And you say you had a tennis career?
Yes.
And you were good?
I'd like to say I was, but that's up to the other people to decide. But yeah, we had great teams when I was there. We competed nationally. My 4 years, we took third, and second in the nation in NCAA Division III tennis.
Who beat you?
The year we lost in the finals was a college. It was my senior year. We lost to Washington College, which is out of Maryland. And they had a recruited internationally and had a bunch of one guy from Argentina, two from Germany, real international flavor to that team.
Division III recruiting?
Yes. It happens.
I'm still here.
You got
Sorry.
It. But yeah, great.
I dropped something. I had to duck under the board here to get
no problem. Great experience there, and fun 4 years of playing tennis. I also, my second choice for a college was Gustavus, which has a great program, as everyone knows, in tennis, and great camps that go out of there. So we competed with them every year. We had the privilege of being able to beat them all 4 years I was there, so that made me feel like I made the right choice in a school.
Now, were you singles and doubles?
Yes, I was better at doubles. I was a good net player, so I played number one doubles and about number five singles.
And who was your hero as you were growing up as a kid?
Yeah, you got to love Johnny Mack.
I was just going to...
You know, I mean, with the flavor and what he did on the court. So he, when I was real young, was certainly someone I'd follow. And then their kind of big rivalry when I was through my teenage years was Sampras and Agassi. And you were kind of either a Sampras guy or an Agassi guy, and I was more of a Pete Sampras guy.
All right. And did you use a particular equipment that may have been provided by a sporting firm?
Yes, Wilson tennis rackets. A lot of our rackets and bags and everything were from Wilson.
And you went on scholarship?
I had D3 they cannot give athletic scholarships. I did have an honors award scholarship, which was a mix of academics, extracurricular activities, student involvement in my high school years.
All right. How about mom and dad? What did they do in Grand Forks?
Yeah, mom and dad had a distribution company, a food service distribution company, where they supplied food to restaurants, hospitals, everything else that serviced all of North Dakota, South Dakota, western Minnesota.
Well, I haven't told this joke for a long time, so some people have heard it before, but I'm sure you haven't. You know, salesmen on the road, you know, they get to know each other. And when one passes away, they'll go visit and, you know, maybe have a couple of drinks afterwards with each other. So anyhow, they're reviewing the coffin and the salesman in there. Shaking her head, one guy says to the other, "Oh, my gosh, he looks terrible. What did he have?" And he said, "North Dakota and South Dakota."
Yeah. There's a lot of driving in those places, isn't it? Few and far between.
My wife used to work for a corporation that she had to travel all over. And that's a hard job.
Oh, yes.
You know, lonely. Yeah. You're in motels at night by yourself.
Absolutely. When you're covering that much ground.
Now, did you help Dad during the summers?
I worked in the business in the summers for sure. I came back and worked there a little bit after college and summers in between college. So I always was in and around the business.
Did you get to drive one of those gas-operated forklifts?
I had a little bit of time on there. Got to do everything from sweeping the floors and working as in the janitorial department to stacking boxes to doing some purchasing and marketing for the company as well.
How many employees?
I think at their peak they're about 300.
Wow.
So it got to be a good-sized company.
Now, did your dad make an example out of you and show no favoritism?
They did a good job with that. My brother worked there longer than I did. He kind of had a career there, but they did, I think, do it right and make you learn all aspects of the business rather than showing a lot of favoritism.
Did you get to drive a truck and deliver?
No, I never went that far. All the trucks were required, you know, commercial driver's license and certainly didn't have that.
So I've started to ask this question because everybody has an answer. Mm-hmm. And if you're an athlete, what is your most memorable thing that you did in competition in tennis that you'll just never forget, close game, whatever?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two that stand out would be my senior year of high school when we won the state championship as a team. The team match was tied 2-2. All the other matches was finished. My match was the only match still going, and ended up winning in three sets against a good friend of mine. Won 7-5 in the third to win the state tournament. That was also the night of our homecoming, so it was a fun time to have it, and we were hosting the tournament. So that was the high school one. College, certainly remember that senior year of getting to the national finals, and just more than anything that stands out for me with any of those is the teammates and camaraderie of those around you. Mm-hmm. So getting the national finals, great. Certainly it didn't end up where you wanted it to, but
experience. Were you the homecoming king?
Oh, no. Nope.
Did you take a date?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Good high school girlfriend, yep.
Okay. Just trying to bring back some memories at 10 minutes after 9 o'clock. We are talking to a gentleman by the name of Chris Kennelly. I got it right again. Okay.
Yep, you're good.
All right. And I don't know why I have trouble sometimes with names.
Yeah.
But anyhow, just so people know who Chris is, right now I have to call three different telephone numbers to get a hold of you.
That's right.
So I know that you are involved in real estate and in construction, obviously, and that you're also involved in a company called Blue Water.
You got it.
Okay. So people know Blue Water is the company that's building the...
Blue Water, we would classify ourselves as a real estate development and property management company.
Okay.
So we manage about 25 properties here in Northfield primarily. A lot of those are downtown. We also are a licensed real estate broker where we offer properties for sale or for lease. So we are involved with out in front of where the hotel is going. There's a couple of commercial development pads there that we're working on the development of those with our partners. And we're also managing those properties as they come to fruition.
What do you mean, development pads?
So right in front of the hotel, there's still two sites that can become businesses, new businesses on there. So those are most likely going to be retail-type businesses along Highway 3. We've got a few different plans drawn for the area and actually are hopeful to bring something forward in front of for approvals here in the next month or two.
Yeah, and your office is out in off Highway 3?
Yep, that's the Northfield Construction Office is right back behind Perkins in the industrial area over there. Our Blue Water office is actually just across the river here from us in the old SMSQ building. So we've got a little flavor of downtown and of the industrial district on both of them.
So you're in the concrete block building?
You got it. Right across the street there, Blue Water is.
You know, I have to tell you, when I first came to town, they were dropping that building that was their Miller. It was Miller Implement.
Yes.
And when they built that, and then I learned that it was an architectural firm.
Right.
I went, architects, you think of fancy and beautiful and expensive, and it's a concrete blocks.
Right.
So it must evidently be a really usable inside building.
It is. It's actually very nice inside. It's a good amount of natural light with how they did the windows. You know, they built it on top of the old Implement basement. So the Implement basement remained. It's kind of they did a great job engineering the thing of having it fit there. And it's a very usable building. We manage that building that we're in, and we get a lot of great tenants in there, and it really serves a good need in the community.
Do you keep a rowboat handy?
Right. We do have the former owner did a great job of having a sandbag system ready to go. He set it all up, has been through a couple floods there, and we've had to get out there and put the sandbags up and do everything twice in our career so far. So.
And I know a lot of people fish right in front of the...
There you go.
Or in the back of the building.
Yep.
Once again, my guest is Chris Canelli. And, Chris, we got you through high school now. You went to the homecoming dance, and you won the state championship.
There you go.
And now you're going to go off to college in Kalamazoo.
Yep.
And you know that song with the word Kalamazoo in it?
It's a Sinatra song. I got a girl in Kalamazoo, right?
Yeah. Okay. And it's such a fun word to say, Kalamazoo. So what type of, you mentioned it's similar to Carleton, a liberal arts college.
Yep.
And so what was your major?
I changed a few times. I ended up with an economics and business major with a political science minor. Yes.
Was that maybe set the road to perhaps become a politician?
Right. When I was considering law school when I went through Kalamazoo College, at least that's what I started down the track of, and that was the political science background and economics coming together. But by the time I was at the end of college, I knew that's not where I was headed.
And at the end of college, where were you headed?
I wasn't sure, to be honest. I mean, I think it's a time period where I graduated college, had a fantastic experience there, great friends, great playing tennis and experience, great foreign study program. But I think for me, it was kind of the end of the road of a certain extent of all of a sudden so much of my life had been athletics from a kid through playing hockey, every sport under the sun, and then really being committed to tennis through college. Was really a big adjustment for me now not having something to put that competitive nature into. So I didn't know exactly what I wanted to do being done with college and ended up moving to Baltimore, Maryland. I went back home for the summer and then moved to Baltimore, Maryland with three friends who graduated college, two who had jobs lined out there, one who was from there and went out there and tried to start working and figuring it out.
Now, that's a pretty big community compared to what you came from.
Yes, and it's East Coast, very different from a Midwestern kid coming out of Grand Forks, North Dakota to head out there. And we lived right downtown, right in the heart of the city.
Well, I have one comment about Baltimore, and I got a speeding ticket in Baltimore. And I was picked out of a whole stream of cars.
Really?
Out of state license plate. Moving with the traffic.
Yep.
Okay.
Did you have a red car? They tend to pull red cars.
No, I I don't know. It might have been maroon.
Yeah.
But anyhow, that's my memory of Baltimore. Well, Chris, when you moved out there with your buddy, by the way, you have one brother?
One brother, yep.
And is he younger or older?
Nope, he's older. He's about 5 years older than I am.
What's his name?
J.D.
J.D., mm-hmm. Okay. I remember mentioning J.D. Ford mm-hmm. when last time we talked about that. Mm-hmm. So now you said that they had a real good program in Kalamazoo mm-hmm. for foreign studies.
Yes.
Did you take advantage of that?
I did. I spent 6 months in Germany, in Bonn, Germany, which is the old capital when there was an East and West Germany. And that would have been the fall through the winter of my junior year of college.
And so pretty exciting.
It was great. Germany is very central located in Europe, so it was very easy to travel from there. Kalamazoo College, you know, there was probably only 250 people in my class grade at Kalamazoo College. And at that time period, there was probably 150 of them scattered across Europe. So it was very easy to go around. You had friends in these different places. Kind of pre-email was just starting, so you could randomly get in touch with people and figure out where to meet up. But, yeah, it was just a very phenomenal experience to be able to travel around Europe, see a lot of it, and be with friends.
Now, how did that work for Kalamazoo? Is it you're on your own? Or did they plan your trip for you and make reservations for you, and then you can sightsee and then write an essay about your experiences? How does that work?
Yeah, because it's so prevalent at Kalamazoo College, they have a lot of relationships all over the world with these foreign study programs. So you've got a host family if you wanted to live with a host family, or you were in a dorm with these schools. It's really dialed in where they're looking out for you and have a great setup. They know the schools you're going to. They track you pretty well. So it's good that way that they've got a system and what could be a daunting experience for many.
Well, do you report in then by phone or?
No, I think they certainly probably make sure you're not missing an action or the college that's there. If all of a sudden someone didn't show up for class for a week, there'd be some phone calls, but you never had some system of reporting that I remember of checking in with them.
What was the world like at that time when you were traveling Europe?
Yeah, it was interesting. You know, certainly the wall was down in Germany, so it was after that time period. Visiting Berlin was still fascinating because you could see exactly where the wall had run and the differences in not only the architecture but what the buildings looked like and everything else. It was very open and easy to travel, though, with some of those things behind the Eastern Bloc countries. It was just really, I think, very simple to get around, great food over there, and just a great environment.
Were there any, like, close calls or a nerve-wracking moment?
Not too much on that trip or on that experience over there. We always were around with friends, and nothing really sticks in my mind of us getting into harm's way or being out where we felt vulnerable.
All right. Once again, we're talking to Chris Canelli, and we're also talking about the QB. That's the Quarterback Club, and they are located on Highway 3 and 3rd Street, and they're serving breakfast right now, and they do every morning until 10 o'clock. I tell you that every morning. Stop in and enjoy and find out what I'm talking about if you haven't been there yet, because I can tell you right now, the price is so reasonable, and the service is unreasonably fast. I mean, it's amazing. And, of course, it's locally owned, locally managed, and don't forget, they've been around now for 50 years. KYMN started in September of this in 68, so we're doing 50 years in the fall, but they've been around 50 years already. And that means good home cooking and good people, and of course the opportunity for many young high school boys and girls to get a job and learn how to work for a living. That's the QB, the Quarterback Club, on Highway 3 South in Northfield, and 3rd Street, of course. Number one song in all 1997. You know it?
That's probably English Rose. Lady Diana had died. Elton John. Goodbye, yeah. English Rose. Yep.
Yeah. It's called Candle in the Wind.
Yes. Called out to our
country. I guess he's retiring.
Yes, no more touring.
Yeah.
And Neil Diamond, too.
And Neil Diamond. Right. Neil Diamond and I are about the same age.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And Elton has two young boys and his spouse, and that's it. I'm going to spend the time with the kids. Good idea.
That's great.
And I guess, unfortunately, Neil Diamond has Parkinson's.
Right. It's sad to hear that. He's quite the entertainer.
Have you ever been to one of his concerts?
I have. Yep. And I was way back in the nosebleeds at the United Center in Chicago. And what amazed me about it, this was actually while I was in college, the diversity of not only race at that, but age at that concert was amazing. There was, you know, at that age, I was 20, 21, and there was 75-year-old people next to me singing every word anyway, so it was great.
When you were 20, 21, back around 1997, did your friends think you were a nerd because you supported Neil Diamond?
You know, I had always grown up listening to that music with my parents, so there was a few of us that had the same experience growing up and knew all the songs, so it was... But yeah, there was definitely a lot of people listening to other stuff than Neil Diamond at that time.
And he has so many great songs. And when he does a stage performance and runs through his repertoire, you go, oh, that's right, he did that. Oh, that's right, he did. Right. Just like Roy Orbison, same thing.
Same.
What's your favorite song by Neil Diamond?
By Neil Diamond? I mean, everyone loves Sweet Caroline. I like some of, he did one album called Love Songs that was some covers and everything else that had some instrumentals on it too that I've always really enjoyed that. But yeah, September Morn I like is a great song. And
well, there are a lot of bands.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now we got you in Baltimore.
Yep.
You have three buddies that are out there, and you don't have a job. You've got your degree, and it's all over the place, if you will. And you gave up the idea of being an attorney?
Yes.
At that time.
Yep.
So Baltimore is a good place to start in politics. It's close to all the action. What type of a job did you get, and where did you live when you first got there?
Sure. So we were right downtown in old row home. And for those that don't know what row home is, it's a very sandwiched-in home in a block row of homes. They used to build these on the East Coast. Ours was three stories, some multi-levels in there, but a beautiful old home. Living with three friends that I graduated college with. My first job that I found was managing accounts payable for a small HVAC company.
A small what?
Heating, venting, air conditioning company.
Oh, okay.
Mechanical contractor. Just outside of the city. And then I was also bartending at night.
Any cool bars or neighborhood bars?
Yeah, just close neighborhood bars, easy to get to. Kind of worked well, but...
I mean, was it for young people, a working class? Or?
Yeah, definitely for young people.
There's a lot of working class in and around downtown Baltimore.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yep.
So did you have to wear a shirt and tie to work?
No. Everything was pretty lax at both those places.
Now, the job that you did, you were preparing for business, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Was it challenging, or was it like, is that all there is?
Well, you hit it on the head with the second one. I mean, I think after being out there about 6 to 8 months, I kind of did ask myself the question, is this all there is? I wasn't really enjoying either thing I was doing. And at that point, I really set my mind to, because I didn't know what direction I wanted to go, wasn't enjoying what I was doing, to figure it out. And to me, that meant putting on a backpack and going traveling. So I moved back home after a year out in Baltimore, saved up some more money for about 6 months.
Now, did you have a car when you were in Baltimore?
Yes.
You did?
I did, yep.
Okay. Get a lot of tickets?
I didn't get one.
Really?
No, just okay. You.
Okay. It's really Philadelphia that gives out the tickets
they
a
do,
lot.
Yeah.
So you decided that I think I want to do something. So you go home for advice from dad, or just...
More just to save money. I knew I wanted to leave and travel for a while, kind of had researched a lot of things about traveling and trying to make it around the world, but really knew if I was getting ready to go do that, wanted to go connect with family for a little bit beforehand and also try to save some additional money.
What kind of a car did you have?
I had it was called a GMC Jimmy. It was kind of like a Ford Bronco or any of those.
Yeah.
It was a two-door. No.
Easy on gas.
Right.
And you drove that back to North Dakota?
Yep.
And every 100 miles you went and got gas?
That's right. They went right through it pretty quick.
I went through at least five Broncos here at KYMN.
Yep.
Loved them, though.
Great cars.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you go home, and now you're talking. Did you get a chance to see your brother,
yes.
JD?
Yep.
And mom and dad?
Yes.
Grandma and grandpa?
All of them, yep.
And did they have a big send-off for you as you were about?
Yeah, I mean, certainly some concerns from the parents. It was a good time to connect. I was there through the Christmas time and the holidays. And,
oh.
It worked out great. I left right in January, but good time to see some friends, high school friends who were still in college. A lot of them stayed in town and went to UND. So it was a fun few months there getting ready.
Did you get any tennis in? Did you have access to the courts?
I did. I actually went and coached the high school team, helped coach. Our season in North Dakota for the boys was in the fall, not the spring like it is here in Minnesota. So I actually helped coach the high school team while I was back.
How was that?
It was a blast. Yep. Very fun connecting with the kids that way. And
How did you pick out your number one and two players?
Yeah, I think the tried and true method is just really having challenge matches, have those kids play each other. Certainly you look at that and see some kids that are maybe more fit for doubles than singles and try to make a lineup based on that. But usually it's pretty clear cut. The ones that have the gray area are kids going back and forth, and then it's kind of a coach's decision.
Did I tell you about Howard Cosell? You've heard of him, haven't
mm-hmm,
you?
Absolutely.
Did I tell you that story?
No.
I had a lengthy conversation with him up at, Thunderbird, up on 494 or wherever.
Yeah.
Anyhow, one of the questions I asked him, I said, who do you think, or what sport do you think is the toughest?
Hmm.
And I'm thinking maybe it's going to be wrestling, boxing, hockey, and he said, tennis.
Wow.
I'm like, tennis?
Right.
He said, yes. He says, you're using every muscle in your body. You have to have peripheral vision, straight ahead vision. You have to have strong arms, forearms. You have to be able to be quick and fast, and you have to be able to bend well.
Yeah.
And you have to be three shots ahead of the guy you're playing, knowing where you're going to end up to get that point.
You know, right.
I went, wow, I never knew that.
Yeah, he had it dialed in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that keeps you in shape, too, doesn't it?
Absolutely.
Okay, so did you find it hard to give up the coaching part? I mean, did you almost say, you know what, maybe I should settle down and home and be a coach?
I knew I was ready to go at that time. I did enjoy coaching, and it's something I continue to do today with my kids now. I'm coaching their hockey and try to get involved with stuff. So I think it was what was nice about it is, you know, it was still a way to be involved with athletics and competing, even though you weren't actually playing.
All right. So did you have your plan work out for 6 months, a year, 2 months? How do you start?
I had it planned out for 6 months on this trip, and I think I had bought like three legs of airline tickets. Yes, and I knew from there I'd have to purchase more.
Did you have to take one of those what we call puddle hoppers from Grand Forks to the Twin Cities?
Yes. I think for this one, though, I came down with my parents, and they stayed overnight with me in Minneapolis, and I just flew straight out of Minneapolis. But generally there are flights right out of Grand Forks by Masaba Airlines back then or whatever.
Big airport there.
Yeah.
So your first place to go was?
Landed in Melbourne, Australia.
Oh, my gosh.
Actually, I stopped on the way in Fiji. So I had like 2 days in Fiji hit the beach for a couple days. And then first place I stopped was Melbourne. Fiji was more of just I was going to have to stop somewhere in between. And
Because there's not a non...
There are direct flights, but this was a cheaper way to get over there for the start of it, and I figured why not stop.
Did Fiji live up to your expectations?
Yeah, certainly it did. It's all those South Pacific island countries are beautiful and for having beaches. And
did you see Marlon Brando?
No.
Oh,
it's big there, right?
He lived there, didn't he? Or owned an island or something?
And then he was also big in Tahiti, I think, in French Polynesia as well. Yep.
So, beautiful, lush beaches.
Yep.
And cheap?
Yeah, relatively affordable.
Okay. So, did you carry American currency or traveler's checks or both?
A little of both. And also had credit cards or ability to get cash on ATMs at that point.
They had ATMs in
they
those
did.
Days?
Yes.
Chris Canelli is my guest. He is the owner-operator of Northfield Construction, as well as many other projects that he oversees. Is that how you say it? Overseas, yeah. I guess you'd say. So now you get off Tahiti, or not Tahiti?
Yep, or Fiji.
Fiji, yep. Fiji. Yep. And F-I-J-I?
You got it.
Okay. And so you get back on the plane. How many hours from Minneapolis to Fiji and Fiji to Australia?
Right. I want to say about 10 each.
Okay.
Somewhere in there.
I have a friend that may even be listening right now that's here in Northfield. You know him. He went to Australia, and he took one of those direct flights.
Yeah.
He said it drove him crazy.
Yeah.
You're there for like 10 hours.
Right.
In a cigar tube.
Right.
Oh, well.
Daunting.
So did you have some place to go when you landed in Sydney, you say?
Yeah, we went to Melbourne.
Melbourne?
What was great about it, the Australian Open was just getting ready to start, the Tennis Australian Open, so that tennis comes back to it. But that was very fun. I remember that going to that when I was arriving. Monica Seles was playing Steffi Graf for the first time after Monica Seles had been stabbed in the back by one of Steffi Graf's fans. So that was interesting. Jim Courier was there, a few other players I remember. But I had the guides for my travel were these books called Lonely Planet books. They're travel books basically written for backpackers, any age group, doesn't matter, but people really trying to live on small budgets. So a lot of staying at youth hostels, and it talks about attractions and what to do. But they're fantastic books with that in mind. And so that's kind of how I was always looking for my places to stay, and always traveling by public transport.
You know, when you talked, I asked you who your favorite your sports hero was in regards to tennis. How about Arthur Ashe?
Yes.
Isn't he a man that really was a man of grace and a great tennis player?
Absolutely. A beautiful human being to set an example for the world. Just a great man, and did a lot for tennis and a lot for society. He was a little before my era, so I don't ever remember cheering for him. I think he was pretty well retired by the time I got to the age, but certainly did a lot of great things.
And that another question pops into my mind. Do you recall that tennis match that went on and on and on and on until the next day?
It was a doubles match?
I don't know anything about
tennis. I
think
there was one at Wimbledon that had to get postponed to the next day, and it was the doubles final, and I think it was McEnroe, and it was towards the end of his career. I'm not sure who he's playing with.
Well, it seems to me I don't recall the names because they weren't like a McEnroe or whatever. But it was, I think it might have been singles.
Okay.
And it went on forever. And then into the, and they don't stop them. They kept on going.
Right.
Oh, my God. Then they got a little rest. Kind of like the golf tournament that this past weekend. Who won that?
I didn't end up seeing.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I think Dave might have won it.
Okay.
Yeah, it was a heck of a tournament.
Yeah.
Five overtimes.
Oh.
Good holes, too.
Yeah.
16, 17, and 18 twice.
Fun.
We're going to take a break and come back and continue our conversation. Now we have our guest, Chris Canelli. He is in Australia, and we'll find out what he did in Australia and make a connection here in Northfield, Minnesota, and Australia.
Residential or commercial, Cannon Valley Water in Dundas is the place to call for water. Whether it's a complete water conditioning system or just salt delivery and filters, Cannon Valley Water can take care of it. And Cannon Valley Water can also deliver Candy Yohai premium water right to your house or business at great rates, too. Chippewa Springs is as pure today as it was when we first tested it over a century ago, and is proudly distributed by Cannon Valley Water. Pickups are now located at 609 Stafford Lane in Dundas, just behind Aldi. Call Cannon Valley for your water today.
The 19th annual Saints Night Out is Saturday, February the 10th. This year's theme is the Nifty 50s, so dress casual or in your favorite 50s outfit. The doors open up at 5 o'clock with dinner by the Hideaway. Silent and live auctions and a variety of games and raffles will follow. The admission is just $15. Tickets are available online. Visit the Facebook page at facebook.com/Saints Night Out for more information. Saints Night Out is brought to you in part by Einstein Remodeling.
I tricked you.
There you go.
I asked you about a song, but this isn't it.
Right. This is Jewel.
Yes.
You Were Meant for Me?
Yes.
There we go.
Wow, you're pretty good.
Half of my head is song lyrics.
Okay.
Half of my memory.
Well, I can do that with 50s and 60s maybe. But
there you go. No.
And, you know, I once heard a rumor that Jewel went to St. Olaf College.
Really?
And I tried to track it down, and I couldn't find a confirmation of
right.
that.
I know she's from Alaska and is actually part of that family that's featured on a show called Alaska, The Last Frontier, where these people live off the land up there, and kind of very interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like those type of shows.
I love them.
I like, what is it, Gold Rush.
Gold Rush, yeah.
And you know, that when you watch that, and you've never been near a machine like that, and you look at the work that these guys do and have to do everything in the cold, in a hurry, in a panic, and they say, oh, it slipped off the track.
Right.
Well, let's go get the other one and push it out. It amazes me.
Yeah, for sure.
Our guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is Chris Kennerly, and he is talking about his trip to Australia. Mm-hmm. And go ahead and tell me what that's a pretty large island or country or continent
and
whatever.
And a great place. You know, I think overall with the trip, and this will ring true for a lot of places, it truly comes down to who you're bumping into and who you're traveling with. And the amazing thing to me from getting there and staying at this first hostel is there was a group of people staying there that I just got to be very good friends with right away. A lot of British people, a lot of people from Holland, just people from all over the world who were over there on work visas and living all this hostel working, so they were a little more permanent there. I was pretty transient, but as you bumped into people and were having fun, you kind of figured out how to stay in a place a little longer. And that was certainly true of Melbourne, and ended up staying there probably 3 months. Started getting jobs. Now I had to work illegally. Didn't have a work visa of anything else, so I was doing things for cash, working on some construction sites, and just doing what I could to get a little money in while I was still seeing the city and hanging out with some people. So.
Is that where you may have begun learning your construction?
I'd worked a little small construction jobs in the summers of Grand Forks doing different things, but for sure this one was the first remodeling residential type construction that I did.
Did you get to Sydney?
Yes. I came and went from Australia a few different times because I could only stay for 3 months at a time as a tourist, which was the type of visa I was on. So I came and went, and that was later on where I came back in and out of Sydney.
Did you go into that beautiful orchestra hall?
You walked around outside of it. I didn't get inside, but the whole harbor there in Sydney and everything else, it's beautiful.
Well, here's the connection.
Mm-hmm.
There's a gentleman that used to do editorials on KYMN back in the probably 80s, 90s. Name was Bill Kelly,
mm-hmm.
and he had a daughter that was an operatic singer, and she performed there.
Oh, wow.
And he was so proud.
Yeah.
You know,
that,
like,
that's quite an accomplishment.
Yeah, because anybody looks at the picture of that, you know it's Sydney, Australia. Yeah.
Yeah.
So were you ever worried or concerned that the immigration police were going to come after you?
No. I mean, I always made sure I was out and back in within the time period. I think what the visa said was it was good for a year, but you could only stay anywhere for 3 months at a time. And it worked out well with after my first 3 month jaunt, I kind of stayed right in that. It was probably only 2 months in the Melbourne area. With these people, and then I went and spent 3 months in New Zealand. which was probably my favorite place I visited while there. The entrepreneur in me decided to buy a car when I landed. Bought a Holden, which is the GMC or GM version of Australia, a little station wagon, and bought it for $1,200 New Zealand. I think that equated to about $800 US at that time. And sold it for $1,600 when I left. So
wow,
I did good. But I was able to live out of that car, sleep in the back of it.
Did you keep your snorkel equipment in there?
I didn't. I did a lot of hiking while in New Zealand. New Zealand is made up of two islands, just a most beautiful country, and to me is almost like an outdoor playground. You can get from a beach to a fjord to a glacier to great mountains all within like an hour and a half drive of each other. So it's really diverse for how small it is, but just a really great people and really not that populated as well.
Are there country parks?
Yes.
National parks?
Great national parks. I spent the majority of my time on the South Island down in an area called Fjordland, where a bunch of fjords are. The big attractions are Milford Sound, the Rootburn Trek, a couple of glaciers, the Franz Josef Glacier, and I would go do eight-day hikes with a backpack and stay at huts along the way and be out in the wild.
You meet anybody you knew?
Couple people from Melbourne that I met came over during that time period, and then you'd bump into other people who were doing similar treks you were and hang out with them for a while, and met one other guy who was living out of his station wagon as well, so we kind of would go in the same directions for a while. And
no fear of anybody, you know, carjacking you or anything like that could happen in Mexico?
Extremely safe country. I actually picked up hitchhikers there and gave them rides, so hopefully my kids aren't listening. But, yeah, very safe country and very great people.
A jungle atmosphere?
No, really more colder rainforest and, you know, everything from glaciers in some points to just really dense forest.
Snakes?
No, I don't believe.
Spiders?
You know, they had a large amount of wallabies, which is a just smaller than a kangaroo, but a similar animal, because they were introduced over there, and they didn't have any natural predators. There's no large mammals on either of those islands.
Oh, did you tie your wallaby down, boy?
Right, there you go. Yeah.
We'll take another break on KYMN Radio. Maybe you can find a way to get out of the sun.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll
bring the mic with you.
Yep.
Okay. We'll be right back. Our guest on KYMN Radio is Chris Kennerly, and here we go with an important message.
Do you have an old junker car in the garage or on the farm? Call Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300. Get the most cash for your old junker vehicle and have it taken away for free. Huber's Auto Parts in Faribault, 507-332-2300.
All right, America. H&R Block has some good news. For a limited time only, you could get a refund advance loan of up to $3,000 the same day you file at Block. That's right. You could get up to $3,000 today. No interest. Told you it was good news. To learn more or find participating locations near you, visit hrblock.com. Get your taxes won. Optional tax refund related loan from BofI Federal Bank. Not your tax refund. $500, $750, $1,250, or $3,000 loans offered. Approval and loan amount based on expected refund and other conditions. Funds loaded on prepaid card. Tax returns may be e-filed without applying for this loan. Fees for other products or features may apply.
H&R Block, 1300 Bolenbacher Drive in Northfield. Open Monday through Friday, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. Saturday, 9 to 5. Walk-ins are welcome or call 645-6281 for an appointment.
I think I've heard the song.
Yes.
Can you name that tune?
This is going to be Puff Daddy, I'll Be Missing You, which is a cover of Police or Sting song.
Yeah, that's where I heard
yeah.
it. He's singing along with Faith Evans. That
okay.
name sound familiar?
Yes. It's a tribute to the notorious B.I.G. who had died, and this is Puffy's tribute because he was missing him.
In the future, can't wait to see if you open up the gates for me. Reminisce some time, the night they took my friend.
Think Mr. Rogers could have done this?
Yeah.
It's 13 minutes before it is 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair. My guest this morning is Chris Kennerlich, and we're talking about his exploits in New Zealand. And you say that it's a really safe country.
Yes.
And you can go from glaciers to snorkeling within an hour and a half of each other. And in addition to that, you had your own car.
Mm-hmm.
So did you pick up a job while visiting there?
I did not work there at all. Just straight travel and hanging out and hiking.
How big is it?
I'd say the population, I want to say at that time, was about 4.5 million total for the whole two islands. The size of the islands, I don't know if...
How long would it take to drive from one end to the other, up and down and across?
Each island, I think you could drive. They were narrower and longer, but each island, I think you could drive in about... 6 hours.
Oh, well, it's pretty good size.
Maybe eight, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. So what made you leave? Sounds like paradise.
Right. I think I only had 3 months to stay there, too, because of the visa system. One fun thing I did get to go to there is the rugby or equivalent of the Super Bowl. So there's some, I think it was called the G8 or the Great Eight, which are these South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, basically are the rugby playing countries that are really big into it. And just the two teams that made the final that year were both based out of New Zealand. It was a great experience to go over there and do that.
Are the fans crazy?
Oh, yeah. It was nuts. It was outside.
Dangerous crazy?
No, just really into it and really excited. And it's a big passion. There's the New Zealand national rugby team. It's called the All Blacks. And that's based on their jersey color. They have the All Whites as their soccer team. It's just kind of how they name things. But they do well every year, and it's their national sport.
Do they have all blues and all yellows and all pinks and all greens?
I don't know what all they have, but yeah, they got a lot of them.
Not like Philly fans?
No.
Okay. So where did you go from
New Zealand? So back to Australia.
Okay.
You know, my first time there, I had done a little stint in Western Victoria, which is... kind of out in farmland, but halfway between Melbourne and Adelaide, Australia, and I had stayed at a hostel out there where I had met some people, and I headed back out there to actually work at the hostel for a while and on the farm.
Did you ever go out to the desolate area, the deserts?
Yes, down through the center. So this time when I was back, I was working there, and... they also had, we got a lot of people through because there was a really famous rock climbing mountain just outside of this where this hostel was. And so we get a lot of people coming out there to do rock climbing. So we get out around there, and then I ended up going back to Sydney then at this point. Randomly enough, my parents, through their distribution company, had qualified, won a trip with their supplier group going to Tahiti on a cruise. So they figured it was a good chance to catch up with me. I had been out about 6 months at this point, maybe closer to somewhere between 6 and 9. And so I went to Sydney, and then was one another my time leaving the country so I could get out and back in, and went over there for a cruise with them for a week.
Now, how did you keep in contact?
Mostly phone. There definitely was email at that time, but I'd probably call and check in, you know, every 2 weeks or 10 days, something like that.
Collect?
I had calling cards. I think you could buy these calling cards, if I remember, at that time, yeah.
I remember when I did my traveling on the train, and when you get there, you call and ask for yourself.
Right.
Yeah. And this little kid, is Wayne Eddy there?
Right.
I'm sorry, he's not available.
Right, yeah. Yeah, right. Not there.
She knows I'm okay.
Yep, exactly.
So the Australian tour that you took, you got to know the country pretty well. Now, did you make friends, like, for the natives? You mentioned the friends that were from other countries.
Yep.
But
obviously, working at that hostel on the farm, really got to know some great people in that community. Still in touch with some to this day, and other travelers we had met along the way. But, yeah, that was really authentic time period, is being more involved in the community like then.
And there was no language barrier.
No.
Except you had to kind of listen hard at first.
Right.
Okay. So that's one tour.
Yep.
Okay. So now do you go back to Grand Forks?
No. They. When I saw my parents on the cruise, they pulled at the heartstrings pretty hard. You know, it's also at a time point, I think, where I was... getting a little worn down 6 months into the trip, so I got to say that I very strongly considered coming home at that point for a little break. But flew back into Sydney, and almost immediately after getting back into Sydney, went into a 10-day meditation up in the mountains through a Vipassana meditation. And it's a silent retreat where you're silent for 10 days and basically meditate for 10 days.
Like a monk.
Yes. Yeah, very. It's a Buddhist-based meditation. But, yeah, a very powerful experience, very intense 10 days of being alone with your thoughts, but one of the greatest experiences I've done.
Well, I want to delve into that a little bit more.
Yeah.
I'll take a brief break, and we'll be right back. And don't go away. We're going to learn about this. I have some interesting questions.
We're Three Links, and we are here for you. I am Sarah Dandel, manager at Three Links Apartments in Northfield. We offer an active, vibrant community for seniors and the disabled. We have spacious one-bedroom apartments, controlled access, off-street parking, elevator, and are handicap accessible. This is a place to call home, make new friends, and participate in many fun activities. Tours are welcome. Call 664-8850.
We'll go with Unbreak My Heart, Tony Braxton.
You know your music. Okay, meditation. Now, I have seen where there have been people that go to some faraway place and they take a drug.
Oh,
and
yeah.
they have a mind experience that is supposedly overwhelming to bring peace to themselves. Is it that kind of a deal? Or
no drugs.
Herbs?
You ate early in the morning and you ate lunch and then you didn't do anything for dinner. You had an evening tea. There was no caffeine in the tea. I remember that. But you were very in tune with your body at that time. And I think everything was organic. You weren't eating like a cheeseburger. Everything was really natural food. So
who prepared it?
They did have volunteers up there that would prepare the food. And they had a kitchen area. Obviously, you had sleeping quarters, everything else.
Men and women?
Yes. Men and women both in the retreat, yep.
And what was the cost?
I don't remember offhand. And it might have been like a suggested donation type situation.
And what was the group that had organized it?
Yeah, it's called Vipassana. There are some here in the United States. It's all international, but it's a India Buddhist-based meditation.
It was it overwhelming at first?
Yeah, it was very intense. You know, you mentioned something in your lead in there about people finding peace with it, and for sure by the end of it, I was very comfortable with where I was at in life and at peace with myself. I think I was able to say, okay, you know, you didn't have this figured out of what you wanted to do career-wise. You know why you came and take this trip. And I'm kind of okay with where I'm at and not knowing yet, but it's kind of also time to maybe get moving on and get this trip going. So I kind of came out of it re-energized to keep traveling and knew kind of where I was and what I was doing, but just a really great experience of understanding myself more and knowing myself.
Wasn't there on occasion a fear delving that deep into your self-awareness?
Yeah, absolutely. When you're alone in your head and can't turn to anyone and talk to them or anything else, and you, not that you're trapped there, you could leave on your own free will any time, but you're really there for the experience. You knew you were going to encounter some questions and some thoughts in your mind that you might not want to address.
Okay. And did you have body language in regards to the other people that were there?
You certainly would notice them and catch eyes of people of anything else. So there was definitely sometimes... And the last day you could catch up with these people as you're leaving that you had seen for 10 days and passed on your way to the bathroom and everything else. So
is it in a house-like deal? Or
there are kind of some separate houses and sleeping quarters, and there's one kind of main meditation hall.
Campfires?
No campfires at night.
Yoga?
No real physical activity either that I noticed.
Leadership?
Yep, there's the leaders of the actual meditation, and there's a couple of staff people.
And if you can't talk, does the leader talk?
The leader's talking. You can go up and ask them questions about what's either going on with your body or what's going through your mind.
So how was it on your body with only two meals a day?
Sure, you got sore pretty quick after sitting that long.
Oh, you're sitting all this time?
Yep, most all the time.
Cross-legged. Hands on
you
knees?
You could put your feet to the side. You could try to find a comfortable spot. But, yeah, for pretty much the 10 days you were sitting.
On a towel? Or?
Yeah, you could have a little something under your butt or wherever else, backside.
Indoors?
Indoors. Everything was indoors, yeah.
Showers.
You could shower. The food was good. I mean, I never remember really being hungry. Or that aspect of it. I do remember some of the physical pain from sitting that long, but not anything excruciating. More than mental anguish and
that. Any thoughts about what am I doing? In 5 days in and say,
everyone looks out that door and says maybe this is time to go. But
do they save people from themselves in regards to wanting to leave?
Yeah, I mean, everyone there is kind of obviously at a different point in their life. I mean, we had a lot of different age groups, people younger than me, people older than me. I was 26, 27 at that time, somewhere in there. So you got people, we did have some people leave, or you'd hear other people kind of breaking down and talking to each other of everything else, but everyone had a different experience with it.
And did you get there by your way of your car?
No, I'd sold the car when I left New Zealand.
1600.
That's right. Did well on it, so that was good. But then back in Australia, I was just traveling by bus and everything else.
So was there one particular thing? This seems like I'm an attorney.
Yeah.
And you're on the car.
Right.
But it's fascinating.
Yeah.
Was there any one positive thing that you say, wow, I'm glad I thought this deeply about this part of my life, and I want to do this? Did you discover yourself?
I think more than anything, that sense of peace was really, I mean, I remember at one point apologizing to myself and then saying, I'm sorry, Chris, and then on the other side accepting that apology back. So almost a conversation in my head saying, I'm sorry, and then me accepting that. And from that standpoint, that level of peace was the thing I walked out of there with. It wasn't, hey, I know I want to go back and be an attorney or whatever else that was, but it was that, yep, I understand who I am, and I'm pretty comfortable with who I am.
Did you ever do it again by yourself?
You know, what's very funny, it was probably 3 years ago. I was feeling the need to kind of connect on that level for something. So if you've done a 10-day course at these other centers, you can go back and do a 1.5-day course and try to reconnect with it and anything else. So I went and tried to do that over in Menominee, Wisconsin. There's a Vipassana center.
Yeah.
And not too far.
Yeah.
So, and it's a beautiful setting, an old house right along the river there. And I went over there for, you check in the night before, you do a day-long meditation, and then check out and go home. And it was like torture. I just could not get my mind to that spot. I was a new business owner, had a lot going on, so it was really much different spot in life, and it was very challenging.
Is that the one that's Native American?
I don't know for sure what the backgrounds are of that center, but
you do saunas and
no saunas.
Yeah. There's a place in Wisconsin to go on a retreat.
Yeah.
And I didn't know if that's the one that I've been told about. Evidently
right.
Not.
No.
It's 10 o'clock already.
We made it.
We have
one
to,
hour.
One
more
hour.
There
okay.
We go.
Thank you for sharing. We'll be back in a couple of minutes after the news on KYMN 1080 AM radio and, of course, 95.1, the 1 FM from Northfield, Minnesota, 10 o'clock.
Trump and the FBI go head-to-head. Altered memo. I'm John Trout. The president has told confidants he believes a memo, its release pending Trump's approval, will show the FBI and Justice Department conspired against him in the Russia probe. The FBI says it has concerns over accuracy.
The memo, or memos, may be secret, but top Democrat on the House Intelligence Committee, Adam Schiff, made a letter he'd sent to Chair Devin Nunes public. In it, Schiff claims the memo sent to President Trump has been altered compared to what the committee voted to release along party lines. Bob Costantini, Washington.
Peter King, Republican congressman from New York, is defending last-minute changes to the documents.
There's one small part in the memo which in no way affects The substance of the memo involves a fact which has been publicly acknowledged by everyone, but for protocol reasons, the FBI asked if that be taken out. I think it's three or four words. They're out. In no way does it affect the substance of the memo or anything at all.
Not so fast, says Democratic Congressman Jim Himes, who wants more answers.
I think it's now on Devin Nunes and others on the committee to show us exactly what those changes were.
Nunes is chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, who voted to release the memo earlier this week. The president will be addressing GOP lawmakers at a retreat in West Virginia this afternoon. Tonight, Trump will address the Republican National Committee winter meeting in Washington, D.C. Correspondent Paula Hancock's reports seeing a plane fly from North to South Korea. Highly unusual given tensions there. Members of the North's Olympic team are arriving for the Winter Games.
So it is very unusual for a plane to fly from North Korea to South Korea. It is highly unusual, even though they, of course, are so close. Two countries which are still technically at war. So this is a very significant moment.
Fewer Americans are filing for unemployment. The Labor Department reports initial claims fall by 1,000 to a seasonally adjusted 230,000. I'm John Trout.
We're back on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN, a friend you definitely can count on. Something's going on in the background there. You don't have your headset on. See if you can identify this one from 1997, the year you graduated from
Kalamazoo. I Believe I Can Fly.
That's true.
R. Kelly?
Perfect.
All right.
You are.
I got it.
Yeah. All right. Did you have headsets when you were doing your meditation?
No headsets. A lot of music on that trip, though. A lot of headsets on the travel, on the bus, and everything else. A lot of music.
Buses were safe?
Buses were safe. Trains were great when we could. Airlines, a lot of jumping around from spot to spot.
So you're for a kid, 25, 26 years old, you've had quite a lot of life experiences.
Oh, absolutely, very fortunate.
So after Australia, did you go in New Zealand, did you go home?
No, so now I'm in Sydney, I go up to Cairns in the Great Barrier Reef area, and was doing some snorkeling in Australia in that area, and I went out on a one-day trip out on the reef, came back in. As I'm walking in the docks, I looked on the front of a sailboat, and there was a little sign posted there that said, looking for crew members to work on the boat and sail up to Papua New Guinea. I kind of looked at my watch and said, I don't have anything going on. Might as well check this out.
Wow.
So met with the guy. He was a retired English guy who had just crossed both oceans. So obviously experienced sailor, knew what he was doing. He had a 39-foot monohull sailboat that also had an engine in it. We talked, everything looked good, so I decided to hop on there and go with him. So had zero sailing experience.
That's work.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, and this was a very fun and adventurous 2 months. Probably the most unique thing that happened to me on this trip was getting on there and doing this.
And so did you call him captain?
Paul. He didn't really want to be captain, but a great guy.
Were you the only person?
There was one other guy, a German guy named Klaus, who was a guitar player. So it was great. Okay. And he was, I was 25, Paul was 55, and Klaus was probably 55 as well.
Oh, okay.
So I was the young guy, and yeah. So we hop on and sit in Cairns and head out. You know, I'd been on the ocean for day trips and anything else, but I think that, you know, the two you've asked earlier, like, did you ever feel in danger? I mean, is that the two times I would have felt probably most over my skis or in danger were on this trip for sure. And the first one was we set out for passage, leaving Cairns, headed to Papua New Guinea, and don't think much of it. We each split up where we're going to have 2 4-hour watch periods. One's going to be during the night and one's going to be during the day, so you can try to get some sleep. So my first watch period was from 4 to 8 at night, and on that period...
What time of the year was it?
This was September-ish, I think, so it would have been their kind of... spring,
okay.
Sometimes, so it was good weather. So in that area, it was always great weather. But So 4 to 8, we have dinner. The other guys kind of retire and whatever, and then it's my turn to go to bed, which is great. And, you know, it was all daylight still at that point. You could still see the Australian coast. And
did you share beds?
No, we each had our own bed. There was three full rooms underneath, nice dining quarters. See, this guy was very experienced, knew what he was doing. So I go to bed, and you don't sleep much your first night at sea. You're thrown around. You know, you're trying to deal with seasickness, anything else. Never threw up or anything. But get up for my watch from 4 to 8 a.m. It's pitch dark, and I'm sitting there in the back of this boat. And all you're kind of watching for, we had radar sensor if you were going to hit something big boat, and it was all GPS coordinate and or whatever.
Under sail or?
We were under sail, yep, okay. At this point. So you're just making sure nothing gets missed and kind of keeping an eye around. So the sun starts to come up, and I start to be able to see things and look around, and there's nothing but water. You can't see any land anywhere. And that's the first time it dawned on me, maybe an optimist, a little too much or anything else, but I'm like, gosh, I hope this guy knows what he's doing. You know, because, I mean, where am I taking this thing or getting it from here? So it was very harrowing to just be out there, this little 39-foot boat, everyone else sleeping. I'm sitting out there by myself being like, all right, what are we doing here?
No, when the sun came up in the east, which way were you headed?
We were headed north.
Okay.
So it was coming up to the right of us. You got it.
And so when you... This was after your mental...
yes, after the meditation.
Did you go back to that buzz and just say, calm down?
Exactly. After kind of feeling that, you kind of said, this is what you signed up for, what you want. You put your trust in your decision-making ability when you met these people, asked them their questions, found out when you were kind of interviewing how experienced they were, and yeah.
So how many miles, how many days?
We had a four-day crossing was the big one to get to Papua New Guinea. And then we were in the Louisiade Archipelago, which is way out, these little chain of islands way out into the ocean. And we'd start anchoring off these islands, and it was amazing because I'm not sure how many Caucasian people have been there. They obviously had been through on a missionary basis because all the locals spoke pidgin, broken English, and had all biblical names like Isaiah, Ezekiel, and all these different things. So we'd go to shore and trade with them. You know, they were interested in getting hooks or T-shirts or anything else, and we were trying to get some vegetables or anything that we didn't have to eat out of a can anymore. A lot of snorkeling, not a lot of hanging around these outer islands and going and seeing things and very cool.
No, is this the one that is real popular on nature television series?
Papua New Guinea's on there a lot. I think they've got a very diverse ecosystem, and I think it is a lot of the main island, not so much out into this area, but it does get a lot of international attention.
I think there were a lot of World War II planes.
Yes.
That ended up on the island.
Yep, we dove on some.
Yeah.
So this guy had full scuba diving equipment and was very good at, I had never scuba dove, but he would take you out, make sure you're able to do it. You know, you'd go down 8 feet at a time and then start doing some more and more stuff. And so about, I'd say, a month in, Klaus left. He had to move on to his next thing or where he was going, so we dropped him off. Was it Port Moresby? No, it was further out. It was some spot where they actually could get a plane. So he's gone. So now it's just me and Paul, the two of us. And we really started doing more and more diving at that type. We dove on these old planes. We'd found crash planes, do everything else. So the second big time that I got harrowed out there was we're down diving one time, and Paul's out in front of me, and we're actually... he had a spear gun for catching reef fish, and then we'd go grill them and do everything else. So we're out doing that, and for some reason, something just didn't feel right. And I started to turn around slowly, and as I get at about a 90, I can see a shark coming right at me. And it wasn't just your, 5-foot reef shark. It was a good-sized tiger shark. And I couldn't do anything but keep turning to face him. And... I get where I'm eye to eye to him, and I'm probably, he's 5 feet from me, and I'm frozen, right? I mean, what do you do? This is like out of Jaws or anything else. And I get where I'm basically looking him in the eye, and he keeps coming at me and then turns and goes straight right and goes away.
No one to check you out.
And so I turn around, and Paul is up there shooting stuff still, has no idea this is going on. And he looks at me, and I must be white, right? And I just give him the thumb like, hey, I'm going up. I'm getting out of the water. And so I told him about it. Was he can't really communicate much underwater, but that was the one where I had zero chance of surviving that opportunity if that shark keeps coming.
Well, you know what you had to do if he did keep coming.
What's that?
Well, isn't there a lesson they teach you if a shark approaches you?
Well, I had a little dagger on my ankle. We always had one of those when you're going down. But I guess I don't know what I would have done.
Well, I think you're supposed to go for their eyes.
Ah. Yes. That's right. They have no protection there. And yep.
Stab them in the eye and it confuses them.
Yep.
I do not speak from experience.
Right. Okay.
So, you know, usually people pay a lot of money to learn how to scuba dive.
Yes.
And that's with the air tank and mm-hmm. the mask and all that. And these guys had the equipment
yep.
and let you use it and learn how to do it?
Absolutely.
Free.
Free.
So, but you're not what they call a licensed diver.
No. I would have to go get fully trained if I was going to be doing the States.
What a thrill.
It was amazing.
And then I like the way you say, and then we dropped him off. And
yeah.
You know, after 4 or 5 days and 1,200 miles on the ocean with nothing around. Did you see the highways on the ocean?
We did see some big freighters come through, which was pretty cool. A couple of times we were anchored and were able to see a couple come through. Saw some other random big boats out there doing other stuff or on geological missions or oceanic missions, and that was very, very cool.
Now, how about on the island itself? Did you spend time on the island?
Yep.
What was the most popular T-shirt they wanted?
Right. I think a couple other memories from there. I remember us... This must have been when we were dropping Klaus off at the one port because all the local kids come around and they would describe white people as dim-dims. I don't know how that word.
How do they?
Dim-dim.
Dim-dim.
There's a dim-dim there. So,
okay.
You know, because we were walking to the market and all of a sudden these kids would just start following around and say, hey, the dim-dims, anything else. So they follow us back down to the dock and then Klaus got out his guitar and we started the... teaching them some John Denver songs, so Rocky Mountain High and all those that good stuff. So I distinctly remember that. That was a great experience. And then, you know, on the islands, there was a lot of a little bit more agriculture, a little bit more population on the main island. I'd call it a restaurant and anything else, but there was more going on there. One port we went to did have a cruise ship docked in it for a little bit, not a big one, but. Met some people that were on that. And
was there any palatial area?
What's palatial?
The palace.
Oh, there's. I didn't see any big resorts. There was one kind of down in the lower area. You'd find a lot of expats living over there and running some of these smaller resorts and doing everything else. You know, we went on, would get a lot of local guys to just take us around through the jungle and a few other things through there. They showed us a cave full of... human skulls from a time when cannibalism went through the island. I don't know if that was 200 years ago, 500 years ago, whatever it was. But those little interactions with the locals were really cool.
Is it a tourist destiny?
I don't know. It wasn't at that time for sure. There wasn't a lot of people going through there.
Okay, New Guinea.
Yep.
Okay, so how do you get to where you're going
from
there?
Yep, so then Paul's going to keep going because he started in England, crossed both oceans, and then from Papua New Guinea was headed back west to eventually go through the canal and back up to Europe. So,
what does Papa mean?
I don't know what the... because there's a New Guinea and a Papua New Guinea, so I don't know what the difference is. But
okay.
So I get off in Papua New Guinea and fly back to Australia. So I had another time me leaving the country, coming back in. And then I went through the central part of Australia, which is where Ayers Rock and the more remote area was, saw some of that, Coober Pedy, where they do the opal mining, and then went over to Perth, which is the far west coast of Australia. I spent New Year's Eve of the Y2K turnover, 99 to Y2K, on what I thought in my mind was the furthest opposite side of the world from my hometown.
Okay.
That could be on land, at least. And, you know, they celebrated earlier over their across international dateline, so we hit 2000 first. And that was kind of cool. You know, everyone thought the world was going to end at that point, and all the stuff going on with Y2K.
Computers were going to go crazy.
So from here, I stopped. I was headed up to Asia from here, Southeast Asia, and knew I was kind of done working because I was going to have a language barrier of anything else. So made sure I had enough money, kind of recharged the battery in Perth, and then headed up. And now started making my way through Indonesia, Singapore, Malaysia, Thailand, Laos, and Cambodia.
You didn't go to Vietnam?
I did not go to Vietnam, no.
Would you, okay, you graduated in 1997.
Yep.
And 20 years earlier, well, make it 25 years earlier, once you were out of college, you're drafted.
Yes.
And, of course, we all know the horror of Vietnam.
Yep.
We don't know all of it.
Correct.
A lot of it goes untold. But I was you went right along the border of Vietnam. And I'm wondering, did you have any thoughts of guilt when you were so near to the country that America...
Right. I didn't really sit on my mind as to whether or not to go there. I think our past history hadn't really played in on that. I think at the points I was up in Laos and Cambodia, I was traveling with someone, and I just think it didn't work for us to go over there. And those countries, well, different culturally, have some similar topographical things and things than anything else. But I did see some results of... you know, U.S. occupation influence over there from when we were there, even in Thailand and Laos and Cambodia time periods.
Well, you could have seen a whole lot of skulls in Cambodia.
Right.
I mean, the Rouge?
Khmer Rouge.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
Yes.
Unbelievable.
What went through there is, and we did, we saw a whole museum full of skulls in Cambodia. You know, they've got the great temples there, the Angkor Wat temples. But what really amazed me is the amount of amputees you see there from all the bombs and mining of everything else that went on. I think it was the most mined country in the world at one point because of the Vietnam conflict and everything else going through there. But, yeah, really, really something else.
Do they play that down, or the Cambodians? Or, I mean, it's a horrible thing what it did to its population.
Right.
But do they... do that as a reminder, similar to the concentration camps in Germany?
I think there definitely was a highlight on it. It's still a third world country over there. So if you're going to take the money and invest it in a museum of skulls and documenting that, you want people to remember it. So there's an aspect that way.
Well, you did mention Thailand.
Yes.
Oh, by the way, folks, and I apologize. I hate that when somebody does that. You and I have been speaking for about 10 minutes, and a lot of people are wondering, who is that guy? Once again, we were talking to a fellow by the name of Chris Canelli.
Canelli. Got it,
Chris owns Northfield Construction and also is a partner of some of the movers and shakers in our community and have big plans. Rents out about 25 properties in the metropolitan area of Northfield, and provides a lot of jobs for a lot of people. So when you were in Thailand,
yes,
backpacking or
yep,
okay, did you run into anybody that had Thai sticks,
the ones that they juggle?
No. Well, Thailand is a drug.
drugs, yes.
Yeah, a lot of drugs in Thailand.
There was.
And prostitution.
Yes.
And child.
Yep. You definitely saw some of those things going on. There was one real big party area where they had the full moon party. I was over in that area for a while, and that was interesting to see go on. I spent a lot of almost 4 weeks in an area called Riley Beach where I was rock climbing every day. I kind of got into rock climbing Australia a little bit and had done it. And then they have these beautiful limestone cliffs. It's down by Krabi in that area down in the south of Thailand on the west side of the country. And they have these limestone cliffs coming right out of the ocean. And it's a big rock climbing community, so you can hook up with people and go rock climbing all day.
Well, we have a professor emeritus, a fellow by the name of Mike Lemming, I don't know if you've
heard the name, yes.
Yeah. Well, for one thing, he plays Santa Claus at First National
Bank. Oh, yeah, yep.
But he is a retired professor from St. Olaf, mm-hmm. and he takes tours to Thailand.
Oh, wow.
And he supports this one community that's pretty far up in the mountains,
okay.
where electricity is something like, wow, that's cool.
Yeah. You know?
So I have that picture of it, but then I have the picture of the port area, the main capital city,
yep.
and all the terrible things that men go over there for.
Yep.
As a matter of fact, I even knew one that would go over there for his pleasures, anything you want, anytime you want, and cheap.
Yep.
And also a lot of these young ladies.
Yeah, it's a real sad thing.
Are shipped over to America.
Right.
And so that's the icky part.
Right.
But
and Bangkok's really, you know, I didn't spend much time there, but that is a really rough, tumbled city for that type of thing.
Has ever seen anybody getting any lashes with bamboo sticks?
None. Okay. I stayed out, and there's the Thai fighting they do with the fist combat and everything else. But, yeah, I never went to any of those. And
always felt safe.
Always felt pretty safe there. You know, there you'd hear stories of buses getting kind of hijacked and all the tourists on board getting taken. That actually happened on a boat crossing a big lake in Cambodia right when I was there that I found out about. So it actually went by bus, which was to Angkor Wat, which is a really harder way to get there. But I never really felt in an uncomfortable position that I remember.
Now, having been a tennis player and having mm-hmm. to be in shape and all of those other plus factors that Howard Cassell mentioned, mm-hmm. have you ever taken Taekwondo or karate or any of those?
No. Yeah. No karate, no fighting, boxing, anything like that.
No disciplines like that?
No.
Why not?
Just never appealed to me, I don't think. You know, even as a hockey player, I was never really the fighter, checker, enforcer. I was always more speed and skill-based.
Where did you play hockey?
All through high school, growing up in North Dakota.
What position?
I was a left wing.
Okay.
Yep.
Did you like that sport?
Loved it. Loved it. It was really, you know, the camaraderie, the ice, the fast pace, another sport where you're using every muscle in your body, both hands and legs. So. Still one of my favorite things. I still play.
So they actually have fighters on the high school level?
Yeah, I mean, they're everywhere.
Are they called enforcers?
Yeah, and it's you don't really fight in high school, but you are out there kind of cleaning up the messes.
And what, you know, I've watched professional hockey, even been to mm-hmm. their games, but, you know, what is somebody, a good player, gets boarded or whatever you call it, cross-checked.
Sure.
Then now it's up to the tough guy on your team to go over and get that guy that just tried to hurt your guy.
Yep.
And then they take their gloves off and the referees stand there and watch. And they're going, what?
Right.
I was at a...
It's very civilized.
I was at a fight one time when a hockey game broke out.
Exactly.
Is that the old joke?
Yep.
It's 25 minutes after 10 o'clock on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. And speaking about sports, Benjamin Buss wants to pass along a word just for you.
Benjamin Buss and Northfield Lines has an excellent team of drivers. With over 400 years of combined safe driving, they're proud of their record and accomplishments, as well as the records and accomplishments of all the Raiders sports teams. Would like to wish them ongoing success. For shuttle services, events, and other transportation needs, contact Benjamin Buss and Northfield Lines, your trusted friend on the road. And go Raiders! Heritage Dental Care in Northfield is a general dental clinic specializing in a variety of dental procedures and services. Make an appointment today with Drs. David Brust, David Buck, Bo Stanley, or Michael Thompson. New patients and emergencies welcome 5 days a week at Heritage Dental Care.
This one might take me some time.
Number 7 in all of 1997.
Is it going to be En Vogue?
Yes, it is.
And probably what's it going to be is the song?
No.
No?
Don't.
Don't let go.
Yeah.
All right. Well, at least I got the band. I'm
yeah,
on
that, that's
doing it.
I was going to give you a hint and say it's a vague hint.
Yeah.
But it's Vogue, on Vogue instead of on Vogue. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening to the 195.1 FM, KYMN, out of Northfield, Minnesota. And, of course, 1080 AM, been around for almost 50 years. And my guest this morning on the Wayne Eddy Affair is Chris Kennelly.
You got it.
And, okay, so we were in, where were we last?
Southeast Asia, Thailand, Cambodia, yep. So all in all, I spent about 5 months going through all of Southeast Asia. Did everything from taking Thai cooking courses up in the northern part of Thailand, traveling down the Mekong River in a boat on the border of Laos and Thailand. A lot of just travel and seeing the country, the rock climbing. Indonesia was amazing, the island of Sumatra, just really rural and just great scenery and everything else. Fun lakes, fun areas to be. But really just traveling, seeing the culture, seeing the temples in Cambodia, really trying to experience as much of the culture as possible during those time periods.
How much of their culture is commercialized?
Yeah, the cities are, but you get out in the rural areas, and it's very, very limited.
And so what was the temple or temples that you went to?
Really amazing, and not so much just looking at them, but when you start to get the details of how they were built and transporting these giant boulders 500, 1,000 miles from where they found them, up and down rivers, and really the effort it took to get those done in those days with just simple hands and tools is really kind of mind-boggling and kind of speaks to how proud that culture and heritage was and what an impact they made. Because, I mean, to build something like that day now with my background in construction or anything, I mean, it'd be insane.
Now, what about earthquakes?
We didn't have any while I was over there that I remember. Didn't experience any big typhoons or any really bad things.
Well, I'm wondering if the construction of these temples were built to withstand some pretty big earthquakes.
They've made it, right?
And unbelievable.
They got trees growing out of them and everything else, and they keep standing.
Yeah, and for centuries.
Right.
It's amazing.
It is mind-boggling.
What about hustle? Do they say, an American tourist?
Right.
Or
you'd see that a lot of people coming up asking for money or trying to sell you something more in the real touristy areas or cities. You kind of just got immune to it where you weren't paying much attention.
Well, do the little kids come up to you and hold their hands out?
Yep, and especially like Cambodia, I remember with a lot of the amputees being on the street, that was a good one. Besides that and kind of the Bangkok area, I don't remember much of it.
I'm sure at heart you're a generous man, and I know I am, but is it so much that if you do one, you feel like you got to do another one and then another one, whereas if you act aloof and keep on walking?
Sure.
You can avoid that guilt feeling?
Yeah. I mean, I've always kind of picked and choose with that when it does get to that overwhelming point. If you catch the right glimpse in someone's eye or maybe see something in them that you know they're authentic and anything else. So, you know, even in my wife and I in our business life today and involvement with nonprofits and charities and everything else, there's a million organizations in this world that you could help. So it's a matter of not spreading yourself too thin and making sure where either you're giving your time or your treasures that they're going to something you feel good about and get behind.
I understood that they pretty much hang out by the hotel entrance and exit.
That's right.
And you got to fight your way through them to get to where you're going.
A lot of places are like that.
Did you take any cameras with you?
Yeah. Great lot of pictures. So at this point in the trip, I've got full dreadlocks. I mean, I've been out just the big nappy hair, real long, a lot of hippie pants. You know, it's a warmer climate and got this big backpack I'm going around with. So really a free spirit at that point in my life.
Was that from the tip of your forehead all the way back?
Yep, everything was pretty much was there.
And how was that out there on the ocean?
Yeah, it was as easy because you didn't have to maintain it much. Yeah. But it was fun.
Now, the pictures you took, were they still or did you have video?
No video. All still pictures. I've put them in a couple albums. Yep. I let the fun part for me is letting the kids look through them and trying to say who is that and see if they recognize me in them or not. And it's pretty funny.
You only have a couple albums?
Well, I've got a lot of pictures. I think I tried to take the best ones and put them into two albums, and I think I really did. The 1999 of all the Australia and trips around there, and then the Southeast Asia leg of the trip.
Did you go any place after Southeast Asia?
So the funny part was my goal when I started really was to spend a lot of time in India. So I never make it there. I got a buddy who's getting married in early June of 2000 after me being out 18 months.
Where?
I said back in Grand Forks.
Okay.
So I decide I'm going back for that with the full intention of leaving again and traveling. With the dreads. He let me have the dreads in the wedding. It was great. I had the last part of the trip had met a gal from Australia that was traveling with me, and we were in touch. So I came back, went to the wedding, was fully intent on heading to India, and then just kind of came to the realization it was probably time to start figuring life out.
What was your age at that time?
I would have been 27.
Okay.
Yep. Yep, almost 27. And, yeah.
What a rich youth.
Yes.
My goodness.
I mean, for me, that trip really was, if I wouldn't have done that, I don't think I'd have been ready to go take something on, probably not have a family and kids and everything else. I think for me, it was kind of that from, what, you throw the meditation piece in there, the great experience that was. Being able to see the world like that and be so much in your own head for a year and really understanding who you are and being pretty comfortable with that, not to mention just seeing these amazing cultures, amazing part of the world, everything else really just grounded me, I feel, and I was kind of ready to go after something.
Okay, so now you're in a tuxedo.
Yep, in the wedding.
In the wedding with the dreads.
Yep.
And obviously there's going to be a big reception afterwards.
Right.
You got to toast the bride and groom.
That's right.
And what was your toast?
That one, I don't think I had much of a toast. I was just one of the groomsmen. I wasn't the main one. So we had a very good time. I had one other wedding that summer. The second one, the guy encouraged me to have the dreadlocks gone before I was in that one because I was one of the readers in the wedding, so I obliged him. And they were really nasty by that time, the dreadlocks were too, so it was time for him to go.
Well, could you save them?
I did. I put them in a plastic bag. I think I kept that for a couple years until I met my current wife, and she took one smell of that and said, "You got to get rid of these right now." So.
Oh, it's
yeah,
sticky.
They were gross. They were really bad.
Yeah.
I had them in a drawer somewhere. Mm-hmm. Really randomly.
Well, the kids would have found them if
exactly,
you kept them in the drawer.
That's right.
What is that?
Holy smokes. But, yep.
So you went to, you were in two weddings.
Two weddings.
And one says, cut the dreads.
Yep.
And when the dreads were gone, you looked in the mirror and you says, you know what? I'm ready.
Here we go. That's right. Pretty much.
Now whatever I want to do.
Yep. So the as the world works, the interesting thing going on at that time was my family had also decided to sell their distribution company. So I helped them work on the sale of that, that to also, to some extent, was a freeing event for me. There was always in my mind maybe that one day I'd go back to work there, even after this trip of everything else. That was now going to be off the table. I helped work on the sale of that. My parents also separated at that time point and eventually got divorced.
At that age.
Yep. So you got a lot of different things going on, but that's when I moved to Minneapolis. Or actually, I should say St. Paul, moved to St. Paul and borrowed some money from friends and family and bought a duplex. And
where?
Right over near Grand Avenue in the St. Paul area.
Well, I lived on Grand and, Dale.
Oh, yeah, real close to you.
And I lived on Selby and Western.
Okay.
Western Selby, and then also on Portland.
Yep.
Off of Dale Street.
Okay. Well, this is all going to make sense to you, the next leg of our story, because we were on Goodrich right off of Victoria.
So, okay.
Yep, right there. So I buy the duplex, start renovating it. I've got four friends who are maybe on the 6 or 7 year plan at University of North Dakota who just graduated. They come down and move up in the top with me while I'm renovating. We're renting out the bottom, and the real estate light goes on in my head is something, this is what I want to do. I'm also managing a coffee shop at that time, Nina's, right at the corner of Selby and Western.
Oh, if you know the one. Yep. Yeah.
And I've got this cute little client coming in every day who works at the YWCA right around the corner there. And sure enough, we end up getting married. So that's where I met my wife, was being a barista at that coffee shop.
What is her first name?
Her name's Sheila.
Sheila said she loved me.
That's right.
You know that one?
She still does, I hope.
Okay. Okay.
But
your current wife.
That's right, yep. Okay. So, yeah, great memories of St. Paul, love the town, great time period to still be living with some friends, and also that light bulb going off of figuring out what you want to do. And
you could have driven up Payne Avenue, and you could have hit all of the cultures you're talking about.
That's true. That's right, and they've got them all there.
Yeah, yep. That's amazing. East Side.
Yep.
Dayton's Bluff.
Dayton's Bluff.
I was installed in their Hall of Fame.
Oh, really?
Dayton's Bluff Hall of Fame. With some people that I never heard of that were scientists and all that stuff.
Yep.
So I'm familiar with St. Paul. And then that Grand and Dale, I lived on the southwest corner. There's two apartment buildings, and then there's a Irish bar right next to it.
Yep.
And I lived in the lower apartment. When I looked out the window, I could see feet walking by.
Oh, cool.
So that brought but the inside was really cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's great old buildings around there.
Okay. How about the building on, do you know where the Angus Hotel used to be? It's now all a beautiful shopping center mall. It's right across from the
Cafe Latte in that corner?
It was a drugstore at one time. It's still named that drugstore. And it's on the corner of Western and Selby. Towards downtown and towards
W.A.
Grand.
Frost.
W.A. Yes. Frost. Thank you. I mean, okay, you know the building going on the other side of that? Okay. It's a big shopping center and it has various businesses and it's about three stories tall. Yep. Then right behind that, there's on Western and can't remember, Portland maybe? Hmm. Anyhow, there.
Sure.
My buddy and I live in an apartment there.
Yep, I know exactly what you're talking about.
For $50 a month.
Oh, can't beat that.
Now, they sell it. It's a condominium or what do you call those things now? And you buy the apartments.
Right.
And they go for a whole lot of money.
Right.
And so when I go up in that neighborhood and think of what it was like when I lived there compared to now, it's Yuppieville.
Absolutely.
So you got into flipping.
Yes. So at least I got in, and I kept that one as a rental, fixed it up. But
did you do a nice paint job on it?
Yeah. We tried some of the streaks that didn't turn out very well and like a denim look, and that was terrible. So we learned a lot, cut our teeth on it. So the light bulb goes on. I meet this nice girl, and now it's time to really start ramping up, and we go. I get in to get my MBA in real estate development and finance at the University of Colorado, which is in Boulder.
Did Sheila go with you?
She went with me, so we're out there from 02 to 04.
Guess what? I'm going to go backwards a little bit. Your mom and dad had this good business going, okay? And you and an older brother helped, always worked there since you were a kid.
Yep.
And your thought while you were escaping Grand Forks was that, you know, it's kind of a family business, and I'm sure my dad would like me to take over, buy it from him, and secure his retirement. And, you know, maybe I don't want to do that.
Right.
And how do I tell dad I don't want to do that?
Right.
Did you have that sit down with your dad or mom?
You know, they did a very good job of involving, whether it was family business consultants and people from a very young age in looking at that issue. From the time I was probably 16, we were in discussions on it. My brother, being older, had actually been working in the business even at the time of the sale, was a sales representative for him, so for him, it was a much bigger deal than I was. For me, at that point in my life, like I said earlier, it was kind of freeing. It was also kind of a safety net, and I think that I felt I would have been somewhat settling if I'd have gone to work there and stayed in Grand Forks and everything else and maybe had this handed to me, or the perception would have been that you never really worked for it. So to me, I know that was something I always had struggled with. What's funny is looking back now, however many years later, I'm like, gosh, what a fantastic opportunity that would have been to maybe stay with it. And especially if you look at the growth that has gone on in the Dakotas in the last 20 years and everything else since that time period. So that's, you know, the grass is always greener type equation. But for me at that point, it certainly was something that, okay, you do have a clean, completely clean canvas now to
without mentioning numbers. When the business sold, was it like, wow, we hit the jackpot? Or was it like, gee whiz, you hated to let it go, but we're getting divorced, and you know, let's just take what we can get?
Yeah, I mean, I think the timing was right for that business and the industry where there was a lot of consolidation. So a lot of these big players, the Ciscos, the U.S. Foods, were all kind of, we're buying up these smaller guys. So I think the decision was right, and they got the right multiple of everything else. You know, I think it was a great thing for our family financially. You know, my parents ended up in a very good spot and could retire young and not really have to worry about finances.
I'm glad you said young.
Yeah, right.
And did they talk to each other?
Oh, yeah. Yep, they're very congenial. Time to time we'll do a Christmas together of everything else, and still care about each other deeply, just knew they weren't the best to be together anymore.
Did you ever know that way before?
Yeah, I mean, I think...
I know I did.
Yeah.
My mother and father.
Sure. I think looking back on it, and I think I had maybe even mentioned to friends when I was leaving for college saying, it'll be interesting if now, because I was the youngest, empty nest of will they stay together or not or anything else. But yeah, I mean, it wasn't a complete shock any time at that time period. They worked really hard at it, and you know, you're... goal for anyone involved in your life who's close to you is for them to be happy, and if this was the way to do it, we're all supportive of it.
And now you're in Northfield. You and Sheila have how many kids?
Got two boys, Griffin, who's 11, and Miles, who's 8.
11 and 8, that's a cool age.
So with boys, we
you
got hand-me-downs.
You let them fight in the living room?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's some competition there. The younger one gets tormented by the older one and all that fun stuff. But
did you ever have a day when you could stand up to JD?
There was too big of an age gap, and he's also bigger than I am. So I think that we never really, really had it. I will have it with my two boys because the younger one's going to be a little feistier and harder than the older one.
Griffin and who? What's your other?
Miles.
Miles. Mm-hmm. M-Y?
M-I-L-E-S.
Oh, he's going to get teased.
That's right, yeah.
We're going to take a final break. We're back in just a moment here on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN. My guest this morning is a gentleman by the name of Chris Kennerly.
I love Grandpa's new home. There's so much to do.
That's right. Millstream Commons helps improve the lives of seniors through all kinds of fun activities. Personalized care from a dedicated and well-trained staff, amazing creative meals prepared fresh every day and served in a social setting, live-to-be-healthy fitness classes, private apartments with all the amenities of home, and a place to continue your relationships with family and loved ones. Millstream Commons, your vibrant life continues here.
Let's see.
Number 8 in 1997.
Something like Turn Into Me or Return To Me or...
Return Of Mac.
Return Of Mac. Okay. Yeah, and I'm not going to remember who this is.
Mark Morrison.
Okay.
Well, it's less of a popular song.
Right, yeah. So. It's out of the top seven.
Yeah. It is already 10:45 on the Wayne Eddy Affair on KYMN Radio. My guest is teasing me with his information about being a flipper up in St. Paul in my own neighborhood. And there are so many beautiful homes up there.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
And churches.
Yep.
And are you a bicyclist?
No, not a big one. Okay, but a runner? Walking around, a little bit.
to Summit Avenue.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Yeah.
Everything. We still have dear friends up there, and anytime we go, it's just, we love being in the city.
I have 17, there's 17 grandchildren on my mother's side, and we're like brothers and sisters.
Yep.
And one of us made it to owning a home on Summit Avenue.
Wow.
I mean, that was...
That's like, a big deal.
Yeah, that, I told him, I said, wow, man, you're the only one.
Right. That's great.
I used to go to the academy down by where the college is.
Sure.
And I hitchhiked all the time. I'd look at those homes and think, someday.
Okay. Right.
Lit up a little bit out of my price range right now.
Especially now.
So how did it go in Colorado?
Went great. We had a good 2 years there, great school. We got married, Sheila and I did, the summer in between those 2 years. Came back here, got married in Bemidji, Minnesota, where we had a family lake cabin up there. Sheila's from Bloomington, so smaller wedding. That went great. And then got done with school there, and we kind of said, well, look, we know we're going to try to start a family. Probably time to get back closer to Minnesota, part of that. Otherwise, we were very much in love with the mountains and the outdoors out there, and we were to try to move more up into them, but we just kind of said it's closer to be close to family. So
my wife and I like to go out there. Well, we've done it so many times in October.
Oh, yeah.
And just before the ski season and just after the touristy season.
It's great.
Gorgeous. Beautiful.
It's just beautiful part of the world.
I mean, home on the range is for real.
Yep.
So you and Sheila are how old when you get married?
2003. Pushing 30? So almost 30, 29. She, 29, 30.
Okay. So that's a good, reasonable age to get married.
Yeah.
In Bemidji.
Exactly.
Did you say Bemidji?
Yep.
Way up north?
Way up there.
And you had a lake property up there?
Yep.
Your family got that generations ago?
Yep. We have two properties up there now. One was in my mom's side of the family. They originally built a one-room cabin on there, the first cabin in the lake, and her family did in like 1905 or 12 or something.
Wow.
I mean, and that was out of our family for a long time and then came back in. And then my parents built a place up there in 1997, the year I graduated college.
I get a lot of shoreline?
Yeah, I mean, there's no great big, huge shoreline lots. You've got neighbors on all sides and everything. But
what lake is it?
It's right on Bemidji, on the north side of it there.
Okay. Well, that's a nice place to take clients.
It's great.
International
great spot
clients.
To get up there and a lot of family memories from there and playing golf tournaments and seeing people.
Are you a pretty good golfer?
I'm all right. I'd like to get better at it. I do have to tell you that between the last time I saw you and now, I got my first ever hole in one.
Really?
Yes.
Here at the Northfield Golf Club?
Not quite, because it was winter. But I went out and saw my dad, who now lives in the Palm Springs area, just probably 2 weeks ago. And, it was fun.
What par?
So it was 181-yard shot was the fifth hole of the day. And the very funny part is that before we went out, this is our first day in town, my dad had the head teaching pro there just come and spend like 15 minutes with me. So I go out, and by the fifth hole, I get a hole-in-one. So I come see this pro at the turn. I'm like, if you ever need endorsement, you're probably the best teacher I've ever seen. I got a hole-in-one.
Well, did you have to go in the club?
Yes. Yep. I still haven't seen the tab because it's a club, all that gets billed through my dad. So I'm waiting for him to send that one to me, and I'll be...
It's going to be pretty pricey,
slowly.
I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
So at 10 minutes before 11 o'clock, Chris, I know you're a busy man, so I sometimes like to stretch things out because it's interesting.
Yep.
Plus, a comeback is always fun, which you've done.
Sure.
So I want to make sure that I get in today so I don't take any more of your time.
Yes, great.
You know, it was kind of hard to connect.
Absolutely. And those were the fun years, were the travel years, so I'm glad we talked about them.
Yeah. What about, how did you end up in Northfield?
Yeah, so then back in the Twin Cities and got into a little bit larger scale real estate development and investment and financing. Worked at the Lander Group, which was an urban condominium developer for a couple years, and then went to a commercial developer called Welsh Companies, which is a real big company out of the Twin Cities with brokerage, everything else. While I was there, one of our investors was a guy named Brett Reese here in town, who everybody knows, and started hitting it off with Brett a little bit, got to know him. We started looking at properties and investments down here, and I was coming to town a fair amount and started looking around. Left Welsh Companies, went to another investment firm. Brett approached me about putting together a real estate investment fund down here in Northfield. which I kind of helped get off the ground, and that was 2011 when we raised money for the Northfield Real Estate Fund and started investing it. And out of that, we started a property management company, which is now Blue Water Properties. And then...
Why Blue Water?
We chose the name Blue Water because to us it really represents transparency, and so much of the real estate market, a lot of people don't feel it's transparent enough, so we want our clients to know they're getting the whole truth and can open any book we have or anything else, okay. And really that we're representing them well. So that's kind of we came up with Blue Water. So that's 2011, and then my wife really... I think a small town is suited better for her. She really enjoyed coming down here when we started looking around. Towards the end of 2011, we had been looking for properties here in town and found a great one out in the country that we fell in love with and put an offer in early in 2012.
West?
West, towards the freeway, okay. Back out 19, a little bit north. And it's been kind of a fairy tale since then. Moved down, closed on that in May of 2012. I was still commuting to my job in Eden Prairie at that time point. We had the fund up and going. Left that job and started working full-time trying to grow Blue Water. And then bumped into Ray Cox looking to retire and was able to put together there. So my goal has kind of always been to have a full-service real estate company. I'll back up 1 minute. The big impetus for us moving at that time, too, was our oldest was about to start kindergarten. And we kind of said now or never. We were living in Minnetonka, Eden Prairie border area. Great schools, great community, great neighbors, but just really wasn't us out there. And so I think we've always been enamored. I grew up in a smaller town in Grand Forks. This community is wonderful. Everyone knows that you got the colleges, you got a great people, you got a great downtown, you got a lot of good things going on. So we've loved it here. My goal is to get a full-service real estate company. We're doing investment development, property management, got construction, property servicing. So finding Northfield Construction really helped catapult that. Great reputation of a company, really been around for a long time. So that worked out well. Everything's really come together. We've worked really hard in that time period of being in town now, almost 6 years and almost owning Northfield Construction 5. Kids love the schools, love everything involved. So we're very happy to be down here.
When do you think they, what do you refer to the construction over there off of 2nd Street and Highway 3?
The hotel?
Yeah.
It's a Fairfield Inn by Marriott.
Okay. Are you involved in that too?
I'm not as much. That's more Brett and his group on the hospitality side. I'm working on the lots out front for development.
The retail,
but,
okay.
Yeah.
So when will that come to fruition, do you think?
I think they're going to be open late summer from the last projections I've heard. I think it's right around that time period.
And do you know anything about the problem they ran into early on?
Yes.
In regards to water and the river and
yes.
depth?
Yes. A little bit, enough to be dangerous, but
yeah,
definitely they encountered water when they were digging the pylons down. Pylons is what the building sits on to keep it secure. And then they had to pump that water out, and they were pumping that water out, and I think an official stopped by and thought they smelled gas in that water, so they had to contact, I believe, MPCA and shut the project down for a while to figure out if it was contaminated. You know better than I have, but a lot of different things have been on those sites over there for years.
Oh, yeah.
So they're worried about what was in underground.
Yeah, I absolutely. I remember Kump Lumber was there,
mm-hmm.
and they had a lot of paint.
Yep.
And I don't know what the rules were
sure.
50 years ago. And right next to it, a gal named Marge from Dundas owned it, the DX, I think, gas station. Was there, maybe it was a Sinclair. Anyhow, yeah.
Yeah.
I remember what that was in
yep.
that area. And also Hughes Fair Price Star Market. And I can do the jingle. Hughes Fair Price Market is the best, blah, blah, blah. And Godfather Pizza
okay.
was in there. And I think maybe Coldwell Banker was in there as an office. And that's what I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. So it took them a while to clear that up and get that figured out, and then I think they got their subcontractors had to go on to a different job, and they kind of lost a spot in line.
So what when you said it smelled like gas, are you talking gasoline?
They thought they smelled something, and the random part of it is I think by the time they were able to get everything tested and clear the water, it was just fine and within all the measurable things. So I think it ended up turning out to be a non-issue.
So whoever recommended that, did they own the company that did the
testing? I don't know all the details on that one, but yeah, that's funny.
So what's bright for the future of Northfield to still have our own identity and not become overzealous with... Well, there's really a lot of places to build.
Absolutely. I mean, I think we've got such a great community. We have no problem attracting people to live here. Maybe I've drank the Kool-Aid or I'm the poster child for it, but I think we could continue to do a better job of attracting businesses. The council's been working towards that and has talked about increasing the commercial tax base and helping us all with all real estate taxes in town, which are hefty as well. So I'd like to see some more development. Obviously, that's what I do for a living. I'd like to see the town continue to grow. There's been some great things happening in Northfield, not only the hotel, but if you look at Dundas, which I do consider Northfield, we've got Kmart being redeveloped, Aldi going in. We've got a brand new bank coming into town here in the next couple months that we're hopefully going to be building. So a lot of just really good things going on in town right now, and I'd like to see us continue that momentum and develop some additional properties.
When you mention a brand new bank, an FCC license to a community controlled how many there would be, and there couldn't be cross-ownership, et cetera.
Absolutely.
And it was good for independent communities with their own radio station.
Yeah.
Well, that all changed. Mm-hmm. And I was at most of those meetings when they were making the change where the corporate takes over. And that's what happened to banks in that regard, because they used to have to fight to get a branch.
Right.
Or a drive-through
teller. Very challenging, yeah.
I remember when First National wanted to extend their drive-through up where the beer... Beer makers now.
Yep.
So times, they do change. But
yes.
I don't see anywhere to build except a Highway 3.
Yep. No, then I think downtown is going to continue to grow to the south. With Imminent down there, the city is putting the road work in down here over this next summer.
It's on the commercial up to Woodley, isn't it?
I think all that can be a long division, yes. Yeah. Our downtown zoning currently stops at 6th Street, and I think they will most likely look at extending that further down that way to get some more density. There's different developments being looked at over near the Village on the Cannon project on the remaining land to the south of there. There's potential, the hospital's putting their clinic in the Sterling Drug, and that building's been all redone. You know, Dan Christofferson's done great job investing into his business down there. I think Econo Foods will look at a kind of rebranding of that and potential liquor store. So I'm excited for that end of town. But you're right, Highway 3 is our main corridor and is where the development, I think, should go. That helps protect our downtown, is keeping the newer development over there that maybe is where it should go. But we've got a lot of great opportunities. Well,
what's going to happen on the southeast corner of 2nd and Highway 3?
Southeast corner. So we are
next to
the old Byzantine. Yep. We are marketing that site for development. Currently, we've had a few different drawings for that site, including a two-story office building. As you know, being along the river, with the parking issues in downtown and everything else, we've looked at underground parking, which might not be feasible there.
Yeah.
So trying to still build something nice on that park, on that piece with some either covered parking or somehow incorporating the building is what we're looking at now. But fantastic opportunity on that corner as well. But I do think it's more of a destination office type spot than a real retail spot, hopefully engaging the river. It's one of the only spots to build along the river, so we've got active plans for that site as well.
Well, and I looked at the condominiums that you could buy next to the shirt printer guy,
yep.
Larson's.
Sure.
And I actually talked to my wife let's buy one. Buy one of those. Great, right over the river and all that.
Walk to work.
And that was the problem at the time. I couldn't walk.
Yeah.
And they didn't have an elevator.
Okay.
So I took that out.
Yep.
But it's a valuable, that area is, is valuable for yes. walk run. The Garden Club does such a great job of making downtown so attractive during the summer hours.
It's a beautiful spot to be.
I was going to say one more thing to you, and at this time, I'm trying to remember what it was, but I can't remember.
Sure.
That's my life.
Yes.
So you're happy, you're here, the kids are playing hockey, Brett Reese is one of your partners, Blue Water is a developing company.
Yep.
You're going to have some retail over there. Retail didn't do too well in the where the bakery is.
Right. Yeah, that's turned into more of an office use over there. I think that the hotel will be a driver for some things of traffic-wise in and out, and hopefully be able to get something there.
They had a Bridgman's there.
Oh, yeah. That'd be a good spot for it.
I bought the building.